Hibbard comes home. The pitch swung on and missed. The throw to second is in time. It's a strikeout, throw him out.
Kick it out left corner. DeAndre wide open for three. He hit it again.
Raider going deep over the middle. Caught. Rucker across midfield, and he's going to take it all the way to the house. 79 yards.
Welcome to the Second to None podcast, the A-State podcast, presented by First National Bank and Cavanaugh Auto Group. Now, here's Matt Stoltz and Brad Bobo.
Coming up, the last four A-State student-athletes to compete this athletic year were in Eugene, Oregon last week for track and field outdoor nationals. They turned in some great performances. We'll talk all about that. But we're going to spend most of our time today talking with an extremely special guest, the all-time leading tackler in A-State history, Hall of Honor member, Ring of Honor member, one of the greatest football players in the history of A-State football. It's Jerry Muckensturm. How you doing?
I'm doing good. You said that just like I wrote it, so that sounds good.
Well, good. I wanted to make sure I got that right. There's quite a few things we could add to that list, but this is something we wanted to do for a while, have you in and kind of talk about your career, your time at Arkansas State in particular. But this is a great time because this is the 50th anniversary of the undefeated 1975 team. Number one, can you believe it's been that long?
I tell you what, it's gone by so fast, I can't believe it. 50 years since that time. I mean, and we get together. I mean, I talk to some of the players we played with and stuff. We're in a group text, and I think we're a lot better now than we were back then. I mean, exaggeration goes on.
When you think back on that team, what's some of the first things that come to mind?
I think of the players, my teammates. I think of the guys that I played with, and like I said, we still get together occasionally. Some are out of town and stuff, but it was just a unique experience to be on an undefeated team. I mean, we didn't know how special it was. We had so many great athletes on that team. It was a kind of a Cinderella in the sense that no one knew. I think we were 7-3 the 2 years prior, and no one expected for us to go undefeated. And as we got going on and on, you guys got Memphis State coming up. You got Cincinnati coming up. And, you know, tough games, but no one ever thought we would go undefeated. But the talent we had, as you would look at the talent, I think of the defense, 7 probably of the 11 players got drafted. Mm. And offense, you probably had 4 or 5 got drafted too. So we had some guys that, and when you've got upperclassmen like that, juniors and seniors playing together that know the defense, know each other, that if one player, let's say, gets beat, the other ones are going to make up for it. I mean, defensively, we were at such that you're not going to get a long play on us because we know how to get off a block and make the play. Coach Malham and the defensive coaches just instilled that in us to be really aggressive. So when I think about the team itself, I think of the individual players and just the athletic ability that each one of them had.
You prepare to win every game, and everybody in every sport, every level, every team wants to win every game, but it's unrealistic to expect to come out on top every time.
It is. I mean, it's like one game at a time. You hear that all the time. And I think it was the coaches never said to us, now we could go undefeated. They never said that. It was, okay, now we're playing this team this week. Here's what they're going to do. Here's what we need to do to stop them. So it was each week, 1 week at a time, and then you come down to the last game, and you're thinking, okay, we could go undefeated if we beat these guys. And the last game was against Louisiana Tech,
yep,
which we have not beat in the 3 previous years I've been there. We never beat them. They had some great athletes, too. But that last year, we really put it together and really dominated them.
I'm listening to Matt read off all these things and the all-time this and the all-time that at Arkansas State and one of the best players. And one of the last times I saw you last year at the 100th anniversary of the Alumni Association event, we had a discussion about whether you were the best player in your family or not, even the best player in your family that went to Arkansas
that's,
State.
That's right. My older brother, David, which I attribute being able to play football to him. I mean, he was 2 years older than me. He played football since he was little. It's called Little Knights, and he went up in high school and played his freshman all the way through his senior year, got a scholarship to Arkansas State. I didn't play my freshman year in high school. I went out during the summer, went through all the drills, and I thought, I like baseball a lot better than football. And so I didn't go out, and the coach on the high school team said, Jerry, you need to go off for football next year. You could turn out to be as good as your brother David. So I went out my sophomore year, made the team, nothing spectacular. Junior and senior year, we did okay. But my brother, as he went on here at ASU, did well, made all conference, first team, 3 out of the 4 years he was here. So they took a chance on giving me a scholarship to Arkansas State based upon, I think, the performance of my brother Dave while he was here. So fortunately, I think it all worked out.
You know, one cool little tidbit, that 1970 team that your brother David played on, he was the leading tackler on that undefeated team. The undefeated team in 75, you were the leading tackler.
I always followed his footsteps. I don't know what it is about that, but he was a good player. He was very aggressive. He was the defensive end, and I played linebacker, so it's two different positions. And he was probably 6'2", 205 pushing it, so wasn't quite as big as I was, which I was maybe 210, 218 my senior year at ASU, but he was a good player.
Did you guys ever have the 70 versus 75 conversation?
Oh, the defensive. Yeah. Oh, when we get together, the 75 and 70, there's always this, dispute about who had the best team and the best record and who'd you play and all that. You know, they had James Hamilton was a great quarterback. Calvin Harrell was the running back. And those guys, when I first came here, I came in 71. I was redshirted. And a lot of those guys were still here that on that 70 team the following year. I just saw those guys, and they looked like men, and I was just a little boy going, what am I doing here? These guys just were huge, and I just looked up to these guys so much, and they had a great team in 70.
So in 72, you played as a redshirt freshman.
Right.
And you got to play with your brother that year,
right? I did. Matter of fact, there were two Muckensturms on defense and two Joneses. One was Stan Jones, a linebacker, and the other was Ken Jones, who was a nose guard. So during the game, you would hear Muckensturm on the tackle, Jones on the tackle, and everybody said, well, that Muckensturm and Jones, they really get around, don't they? But there's four of us out there.
Ken Jones is an interesting story because, I mean, if you didn't know, and I only kind of saw this recently, I knew the name, I knew the long NFL career he had, but, like, he did it collegially and in the NFL playing defensive line and offensive line. He initially, even in the NFL, started out as a defensive lineman.
What a great athlete he was. When he came here, his grades were a little low, so he had to sit out a year, and he was the ball boy, believe it or not. And not too many people said, ordered him around at all. But his next year, he played nose guard. He was on defense. All conference, first team as a nose guard.
Wow.
The next year, they moved him to, I think it was guard, but occasionally, he played fullback. They would get him to block the ball. I remember this one game we were playing, and it was his all-conference linebacker.
You may have to explain to the younger listeners what a fullback is.
Yeah, we don't see those anymore. He's the guy in front of the tailback if you run in an eye. But he was going against this all-conference linebacker, and as they go in the line, they would just run into each other. But toward the end of the game, this guy was very hesitant about coming full speed against Ken Jones because he was 6'4", 6'5", 250 as a fullback. And then they move him to guard, and he makes all-conference, gets drafted, probably the highest draft pick maybe ASU's ever had.
I want to talk more about the defense from that 75 team. You said 7 draft picks.
Yeah.
That defense pitched 3 shutouts that year in 11 games. You gave up an average of 7.4 points a game, and I think the most allowed the entire season was 17, and that was a game you won by 3 touchdowns. So other than just the individual talent, what stands out? Why was that defense so good?
I think Coach Malham. Coach Malham, who was the defensive coordinator, he coached the linebackers and defensive ends, instilled in us as defensive players how to read the offense. That you don't look at the ball, you don't look in the backfield, you look at the linemen. The linemen are going to tell you where the play is going to go, if it's going to be a pass or a run, if it's going to the left or the right. And when I first got here as a freshman, that was so difficult to really instill in your mind not to look at the ball, where the ball's going, but look at the linemen. And once we got, I think, schooled in a sense that every defensive player was reading their keys correctly, and going to where the ball was going and trusting that the lineman will take you to where the ball is going, that there was no misdirection, there was no fake run and throw in the ball, play action, that we really instilled with us, practiced day after day. And he had a certain phrase he would say all the time. They said, "Oh, son, you're just guessing." He didn't want you to guess where the ball was going. He wanted you to know where the ball was going, and those linemen will take you to it. And once we got that down, I think that we just became, we clicked as a unit defensively. And just like I said, if one player was beaten by another offensive lineman, the other player would take up the slack.
Now, could you really tell, if you looked at an offensive lineman's knuckles, whether their weight was forward, or they were going to run block, or whether they were going to go back and pass block?
At times you can. As a defensive player, you're looking for any kind of clues that you can get of what's going on. If I'm playing an outside linebacker and I'm lined up against an offensive tackle, I'm kind of off of him a little bit, I can read him that throughout the game, I look for certain tendencies that he may have. That if he is kind of on his heels a little bit, okay, and that play as a pass, I say, well, he's given that away. Okay, so if I was a lineman, I would know that they're trying to read me. I would throw them off. That I would be on my heels a little bit for a run, okay? And I would be on my knuckles a little bit if it was going to be a pass. I'd mix it up. But linemen, you know, aren't that intelligent. So so you read them like that, and I think they give it away. So I think there are certain clues that you can get.
You've given some of those numbers on defense. Let me tell these folks some more things about this 75 team. There were two teams in the country a year that went undefeated. Obviously one of them. But you talk about the 7.4 points a game. That was third best in the country. So the third best scoring defense to go along with the second best scoring offense. 32.3 points a game was second best in the country. 7.4 points allowed was third best in the country. She had one of the best offenses in the country, one of the best defensives in the country. But, oh, by the way, you also had a special teams unit that blocked 11 kicks, which 50 years later is still a record.
Jimmy Olesko, he blocked 8 of them.
He was unreal.
I tell you, it got to the point, I mean, he was blocking so many punts that as a defensive player, you have to get in a formation for a punt return, okay, that we were thinking maybe he's going to block it, so I'm not going to get in that formation to return. I'm waiting for him to block it, and I'm going to pick it up and run with it. As a matter of fact, the only touchdown I ever scored in college sports was because of a block punt by Jimmy Olesko. I picked it up and ran it 8 yards in for a touchdown. So I actually did that. I said, oh, he may block it. I may get to run it in. That was just phenomenal.
Yeah.
No, he's got the NCAA record, I'm sure. No one's got that beat.
Of course, the other thing about that 75 team that people talk about, you won 11 games. You played 11 games, and they were all in the regular season.
Yeah.
11-0 and no place to go.
That was it. That was the model right there. Kind of disappointing, I guess. We would like to go against a team that was maybe thought of as a better team than us, and just to see how we would have done against them, maybe a team that was ranked. I think we were ranked, too. I'm not quite sure. Maybe in the top 20, but to play a school up in that area that would like to have been good to see how good we really could have been against a team that was ranked.
What do you remember about you guys finding out there was no bowl game for you?
I remember all of us were in the dorm. It's called Indian Hall. We're all in a circle sitting down, and we're kind of waiting to see, because I think there was a announcement they're going to make if we made it or not. And there was a choice between us and maybe a Carolina team or something going into a particular bowl that they had. And I think because we didn't get to go, that they decided that the conference championship does, you know, whoever wins the next conference championship game gets to go automatically to a bowl game.
Yep.
I think they made one for us.
The Independence Bowl.
Okay, Independence Bowl. So, but we were all together, and it was kind of disappointing that we weren't picked to go. Again, we wanted to see maybe how good we were against a ranked team.
Yeah, so the old heads knew that, but for any of the young people who might not have, this team went 11-0. Obviously, there were considerably fewer bowl games.
Yes.
This team.
Not everybody that went 6-6 back then gets to go to a bowl game.
Everybody. If you don't get to go to a bowl game, this you're terrible if you don't get to go.
But this team was undefeated. You know, only two teams in the country, not picked for a bowl. And so, you know, basically what amounts to the NCAA Division I Council at the time got together following that 75 season and started a new bowl game, which would include the champion of the Southland Conference. It was going to be played in Shreveport. It was the Independence Bowl. It was started because of Arkansas State, and we've never played in the dang thing. Not
Isn't
one
that
time.
Amazing?
First National Bank's roots run deep in Northeast Arkansas. We began a single Paragould branch with one idea: customers first. By focusing on the best products banking has to offer and valuing the highest level of service, we're now 23 branches across Arkansas and Tennessee. As First National Bank grows, our roots only get deeper, and the mission remains the same. You first, always. Learn more about our products and services at fnbank.net. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Continuing to visit with Jerry Muckensturm here on the Second to None podcast, presented by First National Bank and by Cavanaugh Auto Group. You can check out Cavanaugh's entire selection of new and pre-owned vehicles at CavanaughCars.com. Played for Bill Davidson. What do you remember about him?
Everybody feared him. I mean, he was. He had that persona that came across in such a way that you. And when I say fear, I'm speaking of respect. That what he said went. You would follow it, and he knew what he was doing, and he just had that demeanor about him that instilled in you a confidence and a desire to want to do your best for him. So when he came over, you know, I think he was an assistant coach and under, what was his name? Ellender.
Yep.
He became the head coach and 4-4-1, I think his first year. Then that would, matter of fact, his first year was my first year, I think. Because 70 was their last year. Ellender left, went to Tulane.
Uh-huh. Right.
And Davidson took over then. So he developed the players. I mean, look, the first year, 4-4-1, 3-7, 7-3, 7-3, 11-0.
One thing you mentioned was just how tight you guys are. And still, 50 years later, it's amazing the bond. And we're around Robert Spear a lot. And I know how much he loves Arkansas State. I know how much he cares about the history of this football program. He was a teammate of yours. But he always talks about how tight you guys are as a group to this day. And that's special to have that kind of bond.
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, we have something in common. I mean, even if we wouldn't have been 11-0, just being teammates, there's something about going through the practices together, going through the victories together, going through the defeats together that tends to unite you with another person. You've experienced the same thing. You worked out just as hard as the other person did. It's like a fraternity. You just understand each other a little better because you all went through the sweat and the being tired and running the bleachers and lifting the weights and all this stuff together. And it just tends to unite yourself together. And it's kind of fun talking as we do get together. We bring up the conversation about, you know, we talk about we're the best team ASU's ever had and all this and just talk about it. And I just really enjoy that.
We talked about a moment ago, you know, about finding out there wasn't a bowl game. It's got me thinking. Go back to, you know, you guys in that season in Ruston against Louisiana Tech, as you said, a team you had not beaten in your career. You do that, like 30-13, you wrap up the undefeated season. I kind of ask two parts. Like, was there any reason, as you guys left the field that day, to think you weren't going to end up in a bowl? And if so, does that mean that you didn't kind of have that moment where you knew you were taking off that uniform for the last time?
I think your latter was our thought process. This isn't the last time we're going to wear this uniform. I don't think there was this expectation that if we win this game, we're going to get to go to a bowl. I don't think that entered our minds. We win this game and whatever happens, happens. There wasn't this guarantee. There wasn't a lot of talk about, oh, we're going to go to a bowl game. To me, it was like, okay, this could possibly be the last time you wear this uniform. Matter of fact, there's two things that came into my mind. The first play I ever played at ASU, I wanted a picture of that in my mind. So I said, this is your first collegiate play. Don't ever forget it. And then my last collegiate play, don't ever forget it. So there's kind of the beginning and the end, and everything else in the middle just tends to blur together.
And it's good to at least have that sense of finality, I guess, in your career at Arkansas State. And as you talked about, to finish it off with a win over a team that you had lost to your first 3 years And I know there's not a whole lot of love lost, even to this day, between A-State and Louisiana Tech. To win that game, to cap off an undefeated season, I guess there couldn't be a better opponent for you guys to go out with.
No, that was, I think, the icing on the cake right there, beating them. Because, like I said, they had guys like Pat Tilley, Mike Barber, Roland Harper, Quick Six McDaniel was a tailback, and all these guys were just great athletes. They had some – what was the defense? Fred Dean played for
Hall
them.
Hall of Famer.
They had some players that, you know, we just couldn't stop. They were known for passing the ball. We were known for running the ball. And then you had the pass against the run. The run won out that game. So I think about David Hines. I think about Leroy Harris. I think about Dennis Bolden, the backfield. I mean – what a running combination, which could possibly never have been. Steve Burks, I don't know if you remember, Steve Burks was the same year I was. Steve Burks was from Cabot, Arkansas, won the decathlon as a senior.
Yeah.
Great athlete. He was not redshirted. I was redshirted, so I got to play in the 75 team. His last year, he played quarterback for ASU, and he was an option quarterback, and he threw the ball. If he would have been redshirted, David Hines would not have been the quarterback. Burks would have been the quarterback.
And he was still a track athlete at Arkansas State too, right?
Yeah.
Burks was, yeah.
Burks was. So what happens is, by just how it happened, David Hines was an all-conference safety who was moved to quarterback his senior year because he played quarterback in high school. And he ran the option. Better, 340 yards a game we averaged running the ball. Burks was a quarterback. Who knows what would have happened? We would not have been the great running team. I don't think that's where with David Hines. Hines is in there, runs the option unbelievably. You got Leroy Harris, Dennis Bolden, who's quick as could be, and we win 11 games.
So it's got me thinking as we're sitting here. Fast forward those 50 years. There are rumors of another round of conference realignment could be coming, and let's just be transparent. A lot of that talk centers around the conversation that Texas State could get an invitation to this new-look Pac-12, and then what would the Sun Belt do? A lot of that conversation finds its way back right now to Louisiana Tech. So as an old A-State guy, if the situation arose, do you want Louisiana Tech in the Sun Belt?
Yeah, bring them in. I do. I mean, it just would make the conference even that much better. I mean, Louisiana Tech, I mean, what a great school, great history. Yeah, I mean, there would be no reason why I would say no to that.
Yeah, they were fresh off the Terry Bradshaw days
My brother played against Terry Bradshaw. That was back in the late 60s.
Okay.
So when he was here his freshman, sophomore year, Bradshaw was the quarterback.
So
they didn't win.
Back when you're playing, though, even with all the great years that you had, how long did it take for the NFL to kind of enter your mind that that might be a possibility?
Probably the night of the draft.
I mean, really?
Yeah, I didn't really have any expectations. Here's how I found out I got drafted. We lived in Indian Hall, and I went out with my buddies. We went somewhere where we shouldn't have been, I'm sure. And come back in the dorm, and there's a message on my door. Call this number. The Chicago Bears drafted you in the 7th round. So I look at the number. I said, okay. So I call them up, and sure enough, I got drafted in the 7th round. The draft back then was nothing like it is today. I mean, just the fanfare and everything, yeah. And they've got it on TV. And I found out because a note was on my door that someone left.
Did you even know the draft was happening?
Well, I think I knew it was happening, but as far as thinking I was going to get selected. But, you know, Chicago, Illinois, I'm from Belleville, Illinois, so that was kind of not my team. The Cardinals were more my team because I was closer to St. Louis.
You end up going to the Bears and spent, what, 8 seasons?
8 years.
With Chicago. You got 5 grandkids now. You had a great career with the Bears, played with guys like Mike Singletary and Walter Payton, Dan Hampton. When they ask about Granddad's NFL career, what do you tell them?
They don't, number one, they don't ask too much about it. They're at the age where they're into sports, but I think the idea that their grandfather played with the Bears hasn't really hit them as maybe my own children who have grown up and said, oh, I know that's a big deal and everything. So, matter of fact, one of my grandsons, I said, who's your favorite team? He says, the Ravens. So so apparently I have not made such a mark on him that, you know, the Chicago Bears are important.
What was it like just last week? You know, your name makes the rounds on social media because John Gruden unboxes a box of A-State apparel and merchandise and starts to just wax poetically about the history of Arkansas State. And before you know it, he's talking about Jerry Muckensturman, the Bears linebacker.
Someone said that he had to reach deep in the archives for that. But he knew
no,
his history.
He didn't.
I mean, he named so many people that played with at ASU, and I was amazed that he knew so many players. Demario Davis had a picture of him and talked about Bill Berge, of course, and he even mentioned my name. I said, whoa, what is he doing here?
How'd you find out about that first? Because I know that, like, I mean, it didn't take very long at all where people started tagging, like, your daughters and tagging them in Facebook comments.
That's how I got it. They sent me a little text with that in there and said, hey, look at this. You're mentioned and everything. And my son-in-law sent it to me, and I looked at it, and I go, hey, you mentioned my name. He knows who I am.
You know, you could make a case that three of the greatest players in A-State history are linebackers, and those three players have gone on to the three best NFL careers among former A-State athletes. So we're talking about you. We're talking about Bill Berge and Demario Davis. So when you think about that, how cool is that for you? And do you consider you guys as kind of a fraternity?
I look at the longevity of their playing. I played 8 years. A couple of years I was hurt and didn't play at all. So you'd say six I played, eight I was there. But I think of the 13 or 14 years, the 10 or 12 years they're playing, it's just amazing. I mean, to play that long, number one, you can't get hurt. And if you do get hurt, it's not a serious injury because you bounce back from it. It was amazing, especially at the speed and size of the players today. It's unbelievable that they can play the long as they're playing. When I think about those two players, Demario and Bill Berge, I think they're one and two, and I'm three, way back three.
Now, we would be remiss, and there would be people listening to this screaming at their phones or wherever they're listening to this podcast. If we had a conversation where we're mentioning A-State guys and longevity and NFL careers, that starts with Ray Brown.
Well,
right?
Yeah.
He only played 20-some-odd years. So
That's another guy. I mean, played forever. I mean, it's just unheard of to play that long. So there, you've got some players that have come out of ASU, haven't you?
It is interesting that from a place where you can compile stats and kind of think, is it you guys, those three linebackers are viewed as three of the best NFL careers of guys that have come out of here.
Yeah, and I think why Ray Brown is maybe in the background because of the position he played.
Which, absolutely.
Yeah.
And you can throw Maurice Carthon in that.
Maurice Carthon in there too. Ken Jones also.
Yep. He played 12 years, something like
that.
You
got the linemen there. It's just, you know, they're not as maybe – up there as
not as sexy as playing
not
linebacker.
Not as sexy as linebacker, that's it.
What I think is really cool about your career, you finish up your NFL career and you go immediately to seminary, right?
Yeah.
And I love that you were able to use football as kind of a platform to talk about your faith.
Yeah, and it really has. When I was college here, I wasn't a Christian. Went up to Chicago and wasn't for my first few years, and I went to a church. I didn't go to church when I was in college. I did when I was in high school. My parents made me, but I married my wife, and she encouraged me to go to church, and I went to church with her just to kind of get her off my back, to be honest with you. And while I was there, this had a guest preacher, and he was preaching about the gospel, about trusting Christ alone, and that's something I never did. And I was weeping hearing him preach. And they had the invitation, which I didn't know what that was. We never had an invitation at our church. And I came forward and I told the pastor, I want to know Jesus Christ. And he led me in a prayer where asking Christ to come into my life and to change me. And my life took a dramatic change after that. And football at one point was the most important thing in my life. And now knowing Christ was the most important thing in my life. And what was good was that I was able, my last few years at Chicago, to show the difference my life made to my teammates. Because, you know, they hear things, oh, yeah, you're Christian now, but I got to show it, and I got to do that. And I felt a call into the ministry, and I went to seminary in Mid-America over in Memphis and went on staff at Central for 20 years. And I see the whole thing. I see the big picture that even starting from that high school coach that encouraged me to go off of football my sophomore year in high school, the beginning of God wanting to do a work in my life. And through those 20 years, football has been like a platform where I can speak to athletes and they can relate. They can identify with being a football player, and that's not the most important thing. You know, God's gifted you for other reasons than that. It's to, you know, give him the glory. So it's been a great opportunity for me to do that.
Well, and sports is bigger than ever, just as a whole. Football, right there at the top of the list. But it's such a great platform for people that do want to talk about their faith. And DeMario Davis is right there among those that that use that platform for that very purpose. So yeah. You and he, very much the same in that regard.
And you've got people that are apparently successful, and I say that in quotes, and yet their success is not based on anything they've done. They attribute it all to God, that God has gifted them, God has led them, God has sovereignly brought them to a particular place where they can share their faith. So it moves me to see other players that are successful in the world's eyes, yet that is not what it's all about, that they identify that they have what they have because God has given it to them.
One more question from me, and I thought it was really neat a few years ago when they put you in the Ring of Honor. And there had been a really big gap, and I remember Brad and I talked about this at the time, but there was, what, a 13-year gap between inductees into the Ring of Honor. And they put you in, and you should be in that Ring of Honor.
It took them that long to decide, should we do it or not?
Now it's been another 4 or 5 years since that's happened.
And officially, you waited one extra year because it was going to happen in 2020.
That's right. That's right.
And so pushed it to
COVID,
pushed
all that.
it to do the induction in 21.
Yeah.
So who else should be up there?
DeMario Davis, of course, is going to be. A matter of when and all that. I think Ken Jones, who played 10, 12 years with the Buffalo Bills, all conference, all American here. Yep. One of the first, maybe all Americans here at ASU, definitely should be. Again, he's a lineman. Ray Brown, I think, is in there, isn't he?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, he is. So you got a lineman in there. I think of those players that should be in there.
So what's it like to be in town and to be that close to the program and watch, you know, what's happened since the highs and the lows and your vantage point as a spectator and where you see things right now with the program?
I see it on an upswing with Butch Jones in there, Coach Jones. And I just think it just takes, like we talked earlier, you've got the transfer portal, which really makes it difficult to really understand what kind of team we're going to have next year. I don't know. You know, we may get all these guys in. We don't know how good they're going to play, how they're going to fit in with our system. So it's difficult to have this ongoing year after year, unless you're a big school, unless you've got the money to really have a confidence that you're going to have a team just as good, if not better, than our last year. It's on the right track. Once we beat Arkansas this next year, I think it would really show everybody we're doing what we're supposed to.
Come home for the Iowa State game 2-0.
There you go.
And just see how many people we can cram in that place.
That would be good.
You know, we talked a lot about, and rightfully so, that 1975 team and it being the 50-year anniversary. So it seems like the right place to maybe let people know who haven't heard yet that October 4th, the conference home opener, is a day set aside. We're going to have the 1975 team at the game that weekend and recognize you guys on this 50th anniversary.
That would be special. I mean, just to see everybody come. I think, matter of fact, like I said, I was on a group text and everybody's saying, what are they going to do for the 50th? When is it going to be? And all that. I want to make plans for it. So there's a lot of buzz right now about this 50-year reunion and getting the team together.
Well, there you go. October 4th, our day to celebrate. Can't wait to see you there, Jerry, and a lot of your teammates,
all
hopefully.
Right. Thank you so much.
Get huge savings now at every Cavanaugh dealership. Cavanaugh has a great selection of late model, low mileage, certified pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs. And most are still under factory warranty. We have every make and every model, so you're sure to find the vehicle you want. And when you buy at Cavanaugh, every new and used purchase comes with 1 year of free maintenance. Plus, we buy cars. Bring a vehicle, get it checked. Come see us today at one of our dealerships or go to CavanaughCars.com.
Wrapping things up here on the Second to None podcast presented by Cavanaugh Auto Group and by First National Bank, where they put you first always. Track and field. Let's talk about that. The athletic season officially wrapping up. With the Outdoor Nationals last week in Eugene, Oregon, we had four student athletes that were there for that and saw some great, great performances. Colby Eddowes with a top eight finish in the decathlon. That means that he's a first-team All-American. We certainly congratulate him. What a huge accomplishment for Colby. Another first-team All-American, Bradley Gelmert. He finished with the bronze in the men's pole vault. Incredible finish for him, and that makes three All-American honors in his career. Carly Pujol finishes 12th in the women's pole vault. She earned second-team All-American. And Noah Isaiah placing 19th in the men's hammer throw and was named an honorable mention All-American. So four really, really good performances in Eugene.
Yeah, I mean, because those guys, you competed fairly early in the meet, so like – it was cool to see. Matter of fact, I could tell you, because I had somebody send it to me, but after the second day or whatever, they had, you know, scored 7 out of the 21 events, and you looked at the team standings, and Arkansas State was in 13th place nationally at the NCAA meet.
Wow.
Because of the job those athletes did scoring points, and so congratulations to them and the staff, and yeah, that kind of puts the official wrap on, gosh, yeah, and I know we talked Bubba's Cup last week, but not just a good 24-25 year, but that was on the heels of a really good 23-24 years, just on a run athletically across the board, as good as you can remember, where everybody is competing at a high level.
I think you should get some bonus points in the Bubba's Cup for having four All-Americans.
Did you see, we mentioned Texas State earlier, and I'll give them a little shout-out here. You look, I'm not unwilling to give people their props, but they had an event. Was it the one of the jumps where they had two guys tied for second? And once you get to that point, it's good just to see the Sun Belt represented, period. And I know that kind of leads you to your next point here. We talked a little bit about last week, but as we're sitting here recording this, there are two teams undefeated in Omaha, LSU and Coastal Carolina.
Yeah, Coastal Carolina, as we record this, has won 25 consecutive games. And one thing that Arkansas State can say is they were the last conference team to beat them all the way back on April 6th. We've talked about it before. The Red Wolves gave up just 6 earned runs in that series. And you look at this Coastal team now and you're like, wow, what an accomplishment that was. Because this is one heck of a team. And certainly representing the Sun Belt Conference well,
this is not a fluke. This is not a team that got hot late. This is a really good team that's consistently a really good program. They've already won this thing before. It's not a fluke when you've already kind of been there, done that within the last decade. And glad that the country is getting to see what they're like. And I've said before that with the exception of bowling, the baseball coach at Arkansas State, with the exception of the bowling coach, is the one coach who can walk into a kid's living room, sit down, look him in the eye and say, you can win a national championship at Arkansas State. And the reason that's true is because if you're good enough to win the Sun Belt Conference in baseball, you're good enough to compete and make a run at the whole thing.
Yeah, that's how good this league is right now. So I see where you're going. And Mike Silva certainly has a lot to pitch right now with the direction of the baseball program. One other thing baseball-wise, and we had talked about it a little bit last week, but just an amazing story with Murray State and making it to the College World Series. I even put something out on social media after they made the College World Series about just how far they've come in a very, very short amount of time. You go back to 2014, that was a stadium that had no lights, had no grandstand. They just put in seats. I mean, I remember a grass hill behind mm-hmm. home plate where folks would sit. And
a cinder block press box, right?
Yeah, and
that,
they have
set in that thing and called a ball game.
They have since upgraded that. I mean, it's a nice press box now, and they do have chair back seating. There was a point, and I even included this on social media too, where we stopped going to Murray State because the field conditions were so bad there. And
for long as probably not, not lights, right?
Yeah. And I'll tell you this, too. With our radio equipment these days, we can go and hook up anywhere there's a cell connection. We've got what you call a cell card. You can hook it up to the back of our equipment and connect anywhere as long as you have power. There was none of that at one point at Murray State. There was a time when I had to take between 400 and 500 feet of phone line, and we strung that from the football press box, which is directly next door, all the way to the baseball stadium, just so we could hook up through a phone line and connect our broadcast. So they didn't even have that inside that old press box for us to connect to. So that kind of tells you how far they've come, and they have invested into that program, not just the press box and the grandstand, but, you know, an indoor facility. And, you know, it's amazing how far that baseball program has come in a very short amount of time, and certainly a great story.
And I'll say this, you talk about, say, I'm unwilling to give credit where credit's due, not just to Murray State, but I thought, you know, they acquitted themselves pretty well, because they were on the wrong end of a performance for the ages on Monday.
Unbelievable.
Kid from, you know, Arkansas, obviously a team Arkansas State plays as well in baseball. So, no problem tipping your hat to those guys. And Gage Wood, a kid from Northeast Arkansas from Batesville, did something that they'll be talking about for years and years and years. You know, no hitter in the College World Series with 19 strikeouts. And I say it to credit Murray State, because here they were flat up against a buzzsaw, and that game was 1-0 going into the eighth inning.
Yeah.
So they didn't flinch, but boy, they ran into a performance, for the ages.
All right. Anything else we need to discuss before we get out of here?
No, just
that was fun talking with
you. It really was. And he's great anyway, but just, you know how much I enjoy kind of having conversations like that with guys who build the past here. And
we're kind of wondering when he left, you know, how it took 197 episodes of this podcast to get Jerry Muckensturm in here. But, you know, as soon as we reached out, he said, sure,
everything
I'll be there.
Everything works out, right?
And it was a good time with the 50th anniversary.
And a chance to let everybody know that the official kind of recognition of those guys, and looking forward to having them here Hall of Honor weekend. And plenty of other information to come here sooner than later about our game themes and which day is which, and some of the giveaways, because it didn't take long to get people to start asking, what are you giving away? So we'll have the answers to those questions, too, coming up shortly.
Thanks so much to Jerry Muckensturm for coming in and joining us today. Again, really, really enjoyed that. For Brad, I'm Matt. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next week on our next edition of the Second to None podcast, presented by First National Bank and the Cavanaugh Auto Group.